It's not like I'm bitter or anything.
Philosophy, a hardbound collection of all the life lessons I've learned.
God is not a Gumby action figure that you can shape any way you want.
All right, fine.
Phil, have you gone mental?
Act like men, not like girls.
A lot
I've
better.
I've got a real clear message for the two of you on that. Stop doing it.
How about we agree to argue until one of us actually refutes the other?
Are you kidding me?
No, Phil's getting more email than I am. It's time for Too Wretched for Radio. Phil, you have been getting more email than I've been getting this week. What's the deal?
Yeah, I don't know, but that scares me. Is it angry email?
What other kind do you think we get here? No, actually, this is actually pretty good email here. So let's get to it, shall we? This is people commenting on the things that you've said in the past. They've just got some conundrums they'd like for you to resolve. Let's start with the issue of women in ministry. You spoke about that recently here on Too Wretched for Radio. CBMW.org, a very helpful site, would you agree? CBMW, Council for Biblical
Yes.
Manhood and Womanhood. So my response to these emails has been, if you really want a clear treatise on this, more thorough than what we could handle here, CBMW, because they make it through issues like, what about women fill in the blank? Can a woman fill in the blank? They're very helpful with that. Some people, however, had some conundrums. For instance, this is a conundrum from a church that is starting up, and normally they would not have a woman playing a role in the church service that might be construed as taking leadership roles or the role of elder. So they're a sound group of folks. They understand theology well, but they got a little conundrum as a startup church. They've only got one room that they can use. And so the kids teaching, they're trying to incorporate it into the service. So the question would be, Phil, can a woman lead that part of the worship just for the kids? What say you, Phil Johnson?
I would say that's a question Scripture doesn't even address. And beyond that, I think it's up to the elders of that church. You know, if there are men present in the service, well, I don't know. I don't want to make a rule because, you know, if it's clear that she's teaching the children, I don't care if the men listen in, you know. If the idea is she's teaching the whole congregation, that's a different matter. And I think you'd have to hear the teaching and know exactly what's going on before you could say, yes, I approve, or no, I don't.
So you're getting all squishy, are you?
Yeah, I am.
That's so Phil Johnson travels to Ukraine and gets all liberal. Okay, bye.
Well, you remember when we discussed this before, I was a little squishy. There are certain things that I'm a little uncomfortable with that I still wouldn't make a rule for everybody. I mentioned before that I don't even like the idea of having a woman direct the choir because that's a leadership position. And, you know, in the General Assembly of the church, for a woman to be in a position of leadership sends a message that I just don't approve of. But I don't know that I'd impose all of my rules on every other church. If I visited a church where the woman was the choir director, I wouldn't stand up and complain.
You wouldn't videotape it so you could put it on the YouTube machine? All right, so you answered another email. What about a worship leader who is a woman? You would say thumbs down.
Yeah, in fact, that came up when we talked about it before, and I said, no, I'm just not in favor of that. If that's, in the first place, I hate it that we call the song leader the worship director. I actually preached on this yesterday.
What text was
that? The sermon is as much from John 4. Okay. The Father seeks those who worship him in spirit and in truth. And what is the nature of worship? What is true worship? What do we think of when we think of worship? And I was saying, look, if what you think of when you hear the word worship is the music, then you've got a deficient view of what worship is. And just the title, worship leader, suggests this is a person that's leading the entire congregation in worship. That if that doesn't violate the spirit of what Paul says when he says, I don't permit a woman to take authority or teach men, If that doesn't apply to the worship leader, I don't know what it would apply to. But I hate that that title, worship leader, for the guy who's leading songs, because the pastor who's doing the preaching and teaching is actually leading the congregation in the most important aspect of their worship. And I think we've lost sight of that in the church today.
I think that's why, too, we don't make a big deal out of the offering in a lot of churches, because they fail to recognize that as a part of worship. That any sort of liturgy, yeah, that's a part of worship. The preaching of the word, that's a part of worship. So I agree, it's a deficient understanding of worship. Now, Phil, this kind of might give you the shakes, but in response to the conundrum about the woman teaching the kids in the Sunday service because they can't do it in Sunday school because their facilities won't allow for it, I actually said this, I wouldn't make a law, but my leaning, you tell me if you think this is wrong, because of the verse that you're talking about, 1 Timothy 2, the qualifications for an elder, that the issue is not that a woman would be, you can debate whether it would be seen as taking authority, but the issue is teaching. And I just thought, because men are present and they'd be receiving that teaching, my leaning would be toward no, but I wouldn't make a law about it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I lean the same way in this sense. While I wouldn't make a law about it, I wouldn't openly criticize somebody else if their worship service is ordered that way. If I'm the pastor in charge or one of the elders who has a ruling voice, I would say, no, let's not do that. There's no reason the pastor can't teach the children. And in fact, if the pastor himself isn't capable of putting truth on a level that little children can understand, then I wonder how gifted he really is to teach. So what you're saying when you bring a woman in to do that is that here's somebody who's more qualified than our pastor to teach the Bible to our children, and that message troubles me.
Next email. A group of individuals, approximately 25 to 30 people, gather together prior to church service to pray for the service, the pastors, the leaders, etc. I remember when churches used to do that a lot. This group allows both men and women, whom are scheduled on a calendar, to pray on their scheduled Sunday. Furthermore, and we might want to keep the furthermore away from this, but nevertheless, furthermore, prior to the designated person's prayer, he or she typically shares a Bible verse and teaching for that morning prior to the prayer. Here are my questions. Can women lead prayer for the service in a group composed of women and men? What say you, Bill Johnson?
Well, you know, I was all prepared to be, yeah, friendly. I don't care. That sounds like a great idea. Have a group of people informally get together to pray. But the longer the question went on, the more complex it got, because now you've got an organized time of teaching. It's an ad hoc Sunday school class, and it just seems like a backdoor way to get the women in there to teach the men. Yeah, no. I mean, I love the idea of an informal group of lay people who get together every Sunday to pray for the church service and the people who will come and the people who are teaching and all that. And I that's fine with me. If it's a mixture of men and women praying together, that's how the church ought to pray. But the more organized it and official looking it gets, the more I'm troubled about, you know, handing the teaching responsibilities off to women. And plus, you've moved beyond a simple prayer meeting once you introduce a Bible verse with teaching about it. It's, again, an ad hoc Sunday school class, and it ought to operate then under the same rules as any other adult Sunday school class.
Now, I did not look up the Greek, but every translation that I've seen so far is consistent that it's or. I do not permit a woman to teach or to have authority over a man. Okay, so what sometimes people might say, well, that type of teaching doesn't demonstrate authority. Well, it's actually two clear prohibitions, teaching or authority, which broadens it, but just teaching men.
That's right.
It would be a violation of 1 Timothy 2:12.
Yeah, plus I don't agree. It sounds like a dodge to say, well, it's teaching. It doesn't involve authority. Teaching, by definition, does involve authority.
Yeah, it should. And by the way, just as a reminder, because we're now done with the women in ministry questions, just a reminder to those of you who are wondering, Yes, Phil hates women. Got to tell you, Phil, the pictures, though, of you. With
I do
your
not.
You with your granddaughter just kills me when you're with Penny. Just kills me.
I know it.
Everybody needs to see that Phil Johnson. I'm telling. And by the way, well, talk about cloning. I saw a little bit of a video of your son. Was it Jedediah in the pulpit at Grace Church?
That would have been Jeremiah.
That was just kind of scary. It was like seeing you 30 years ago is what that was. It's like mini-me Phil Johnson. And it was what cracked me up. Okay, first of all, the Lord, you could tell it was your son. But more than that, the way that he spoke in just a very commanding, authoritative way, I just went, and look, with his hands on the pulpit, like, I've got this, people. It was just...
It's and it, you know, it's funny because of my three sons, he's probably the one who growing up and everything seemed the most shy and the most tentative. Mm-hmm. And yet it's true. He's grown up to be a whole lot like his dad. Mm-hmm. Poor kid.
Prayers for the Johnson family continue. Dear Phil, so I just listened to Too Wretched for Radio segment 423. I'm a little confused. Phil, you said something like, if you're not qualified to be an elder, you're not qualified to serve in the church service. And then he comes up with an example. It is my desire to serve in the music ministry, but I'm not qualified to be an elder. Should I not seek to serve in the music ministry? What say you, sir?
No, that is not what I was saying, actually. And I don't remember exactly what I said, but... I do remember listening to that myself. I thought, yeah, that could be a little unclear. Like I'm saying, you can't do anything in the church unless you qualify to be an elder. That is not my position. I do think if you're going to serve in, public church service, the worship service, when the collective church is together and you're doing some kind of ministry, whether it's singing or, you know, maybe even passing the collection plate, I think you ought to meet the qualifications of a deacon. Now, the qualifications of a deacon and the qualifications of an elder are pretty much parallel, the chief difference being the elder is also gifted to teach. Deacon doesn't have to be gifted to teach. He might be gifted to sing or to pass the collection plate, but he ought to meet those qualifications, the moral qualifications. And in fact, that's the interesting thing about all the qualifications for office holders in the church. Other than the fact that the elder has to be gifted to teach, other than that, all those qualifications are far more leaning towards moral qualifications rather than talents and skills.
Yeah, see, it's when you take a look at the list of both deacons and elders in 1 Timothy 2, Titus 1, 1 Timothy 3, it seems to me that every Christian, for the most part, should possess those things. I mean, okay.
That's
maybe,
right.
Maybe you don't need to have the gift of hospitality, let's say, but the only difference really would be teaching and preaching. Otherwise, all of those other things, married faithfully, you're raising your children well, you're not quarrelsome, you're not a wine bibber, you're not covetous. Those are pretty
right.
standard
and even,
fare.
Even with hospitality, it doesn't say you have to have the gift of hospitality. It just says you have to be hospitable. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that likewise applies to every Christian. These are Christ-like character qualities that every Christian should aspire to. And what Paul is saying there to Timothy is that a person who isn't, or let's say a person who is scandalously failing to meet any of those qualities of Christ-likeness shouldn't be put forward in a position of obvious leadership or involvement in the worship service. He needs to get his life right first before he can lead the church or be in a position of ministry, public ministry in the church. This is a problem, I think, that's almost epidemic among young men who seem drawn to open-air ministry. I love open-air ministry. I love when you go out in the open air and preach. I love to hear that. I love to see guys out there preaching the gospel, but it is true that somehow, for some reason, that type of ministry seems to draw people whose lives are notoriously inconsistent or their theology is bad. And I really think we'd all be better off if open-air ministry were were held to the same rules as, you know, public church ministry, that you don't do it unless you meet those basic moral qualifications.
Now, I have some open-air preaching that I'm sure that you would just love. Would you like to hear some open-air preaching, Phil?
I have a feeling I'm not going to love it, but go ahead.
Don't get mad at me. Don't start judging me. Judgment is not right if you're a sinner. Of course, I can judge you, and I'm going to judge you all day long. Look, if you don't like judgment,
oh, wow.
No, hold on. He's getting warmed up, Phil.
That... God.
That's beneficial right there.
That is the kind of thing that gives open air ministry a bad name.
I know.
Oh, that's awful.
When we shared that on Regular Wretched, I thought Rob Bell was right about that guy.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I'm talking about. I think the reason people who wouldn't qualify for any other kind of ministry seem drawn to that is they like the spectacle, they like the attention, and yet they're not, because of the moral obvious moral imperfections in their life or doctrine, they're not going to find any church that's going to give them a platform from which to minister. So they take their little soapbox and go out in the public and embarrass the cause of Christ.
You know, the conversation that we're having, I suspect the majority, and I mean closer to almost the entirety of evangelical Christianity, thinks, lighten up, man. Just let people serve in the church service. Get them involved. Let them do their thing. Just be this high standard of yours. Nobody's going to want to come to church with that attitude. And we have so lowered the requirements for participation in the worship service. I think the effects of that have been very damaging.
Yeah, you're right. I know of churches that where the goal is, you know, as soon as a visitor comes, they look for ways to get them plugged in because they figure that's the way, you know, to get the excitement, the buzz about the church going. And
Dear Phil,
but I wonder what people like that do with the qualifications that are listed in Scripture. What do they think that's all about?
Somebody else. Dear Phil, over the past 20 years, I've noticed more and more of our songs are coming from groups like Hillsong, Elevation Church, Bethel Music, and the like. I would have said, and their ilk. As I get older, I become more aware of the constant and increasing false teachings, etc., etc. I brought this to the attention of my pastors and have been told we can separate the songs from the writers without consequence. For the record, our leadership is the sort that found the Strange Fire Conference, quote, needlessly divisive, and my pastor says John MacArthur is overly harsh. What say you, Phil? Can we sing some of those songs that aren't heresy from heretical groups?
Again, this is not necessarily something I'd want to make a hard rule over.
I know you would.
The truth is, there were some questionable aspects of Isaac Watts's theology.
No, you know what? Okay, and I've got a response to that. You're correct. In fact, was it Horatio Spafford who had some, was maybe not, you know, struggled with being a believer? Okay, but the difference is knowledge, all right? Most folks are not aware of the history of Horatio. They're not aware of Isaac Watts. But today, the kids so know the Hillsong, the Jesus Culture, the Elevation. When we incorporate it into our service because of the knowledge, they make the connection and assume that the church is okay with it.
Well, that's one of the factors I would take into account, too. You know, exactly what message are you sending? And so, I don't know. I mean, we used to all sing Hillsong songs before Hillsong became...
Shout to the Lord of the earth.
Yeah.
Come on.
That's right.
Key change with me. Hands up. Come on. Let me see Phil put
not
his hands up.
Do
Come
it.
On. Just once. Just put your hand up. Just put your... There it is.
All right. Hands up.
I'm like the stop sign guy at the construction site. Okay, fine.
That's right.
All right. So you wouldn't make a law about it.
No, I wouldn't make like a hard and fast rule, because I think there are exceptions, and I think there are hymns that have been in our hymn books for years that were written by people who, if you knew the background or if you knew the story, you know, like that one hymn, Prone to Wander, Lord, I Feel, that's a great hymn. But the guy who wrote it apostatized.
He done. That's why I don't like singing that line. Every time that line comes up in the hymn, I just go, "Yeah, I'm not going to sing that line."
Yeah.
Okay. So let me summarize it this way, Phil. You wouldn't make a definitive law, but because of the current context and the current knowledge that we have of Hillsong Elevation Jesus culture, you would not recommend it. How'd I do? Is that a pretty good summary?
That's correct. That's exactly right. Now, and if I sound squishy on this again, it's because I get a lot of emails from people who say things like, "Oh, my church sang a Hillsong song on Sunday.
They're
now
goners.
I got to go find a new church to go to."
No.
Yeah, and that's a dumb reason to quit a church. You know, if I were the person picking the songs, I wouldn't pick Hillsong songs. But I'm not going to walk out of a church just because they sang one. Now, if the song itself was heretical, you know, like it's teaching some kind of heresy, and then you point that out to the leadership, and they say, "We don't care, we like the music," then now you've got a problem. Now you've got something you need to pursue. But I wouldn't make a federal case out of it just because, you know, somebody sang Shout to the Lord.
Which actually was not a horrible song. Hold on, Phil. Get ready for some reckless love. This one's all the rage these days, being sung all over the place. God's reckless love.
Before I spoke a word, you were singing over me. You have been so, so good to me.
Justin Bieber sang this song recently at Coachella.
I took a
really?
Breath,
hold on, you're getting the chorus.
You know, I've never heard it. Are you going to really play this?
Oh, no. You're getting the whole thing.
So, so kind to me.
Here we go. Here's the chorus right at 1 minute. Perfect.
Oh, the overwhelming, never-ending, reckless love.
Torturing
God.
There you have it right there. The reckless love of God.
Not sure what that means, but it's a reminder why I don't listen to contemporary Christian music. So much of it is that sort of syrupy love song style, you know, with a lot of vocal fry and whiny voices. It just doesn't do it for me.
I think, though, it's important to recognize where this comes from. It is that romantic view that is so prevalent in New Apostolic Reformation circles, that is, you know, Jesus, he's our lover, Jesus is our husband. Well, he's our husband in a metaphorical sense, but they take Song of Solomon, they hyper-allegorize it. Mike Bickle from IHOP has made it clear, well, no, we're not talking about physical love here. If you have to say that that's not what you're talking about, you're probably getting dangerously close to that line.
Oh, it chases me down, fights till found, leaves the 99. I couldn't earn.
All right, so God he's just going to be careless, thoughtless, and he's going to find you because he's so cuckoo-cachoo crazy about you. Phil, now this one actually says, "Hi, Todd." So for a moment, I had a glimmer of hope. It said, "Hi, Todd. Since you're asking Phil Johnson questions, I have one for him. Will the MacArthur Study Bible be available in the HCSB/CSB version?" I've never even heard it. Was that Holman? What HCSB? What is
that? Yeah, that's the Holman Christian Standard Bible, HCSB. And they just revised it and changed the name. So it's, I think, now just CSB,
correct.
The Christian
okay.
Standard Bible.
Yeah, all right.
And honestly, I loved the Holman Christian Standard Bible version. They did some things that others didn't do. For example, they translated the word slave literally instead of making it servant, and some other stuff like that they've undone in this newer translation to make it a little bit more generic. So I actually like the old version, which is beside the point of his question.
Yeah,
the answer
say, well,
is
that's nice, are, but what's the answer?
The answer is there are no plans to do it in that version, but I wouldn't rule it out. It depends on, you know, like anything else in publishing, supply and demand. It would be a decision by the publisher, not by John MacArthur, to do it in a new translation.
So you then I think, though, then the question that everybody would ask next is, when, oh, when is the MacArthur Study Bible going to be available in the Passion Translation? That's what we want to know.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever going to happen. Because the people who like the Passion Translation won't like the MacArthur Study Bible notes.
No, but they probably like this song, which is going to take us home. Send your questions to Phil at Grace to You, because I'm not bitter or anything. Not when I'm so adorable and loved by God.
I couldn't earn, and I don't deserve it. Still, you